This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of June 17th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday night at a decent hour is my buddy Jim Allen. How you doing?
I had to think what day it is because I was off Friday and I was off Sunday, so it's really hard.
They call him the working man.
Huh? Yeah, and I did a blog. I did a blog post on Saturday, and then for my readers, I apologize because work got very hectic, and I forgot to post it, and then I didn't blog today on my day off.
So, yes.
Hang in there, guys. I'm not forgetting you.
Okay, all right. Well, we had an exciting week here because I didn't know that you were going to be off on Sunday, and I was trying to figure out when we were going to record and if we were going to be able to get in the interleague winner or not. And then you come up with this thing on, when was it, Friday? You told me finally, hey, I'm off on Sunday. I'm like, well, why don't you tell me that before? I was worried I was thinking I was going to work through the night.
You know, me and you know, dates,
schedules,
times,
and dates? Yeah.
Dates and times were put on the earth to confound me.
Yes, and they're doing an excellent job. But anyway, you told me you are off on Sunday, so here we are, a very decent hour, and we're going to talk about the interleague championship for Rakuten. But on this week's show, we've got Anderson Espinoza of Oryx. We talk interleague. We're going to look at the standings, examine the heavy-hitting teams of NPB, and handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, before we get going, it's Father's Day today, and the Wonder Twins are joining us to say hello and make their debut. What's your name?
Taylor.
What's your name?
KJ.
Wow, so nice of you to join us tonight.
So tell me about yourself, Kana.
My name, I'm 7 years, no, 7 and a half years old.
Mm-hmm.
And we're both second grade.
You're both in the second grade? Okay, KJ, what do you like?
Cars.
Cars? That's it?
My favorite color is gold.
Your favorite color is gold now? I didn't know that. Okay.
Mm.
Tina, what's your favorite color?
Pink.
Okay, pink. Yep, stay in the same.
I believe that.
All right, well, tell everybody to enjoy their baseball.
Enjoy your baseball.
Thank you. I will.
All right. Good night. That's it.
Good night.
Thank you.
Nice to see you guys. Thanks, kids.
All right. All right. Go to sleep. Bye-bye.
Boy, that was quick. Is it always that quick? You always get out.
I might tell them to go to sleep, but sleep is really far. It's a long, like a 1 hour journey.
It's a marathon. Wow. Okay.
Shorter than a marathon, but yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so with the preliminaries out of the way, I was up at Cebu. Hold on, I take that back. I was at Tokyo Dome during Interleague to talk to the Oryx Buffaloes and some Yomiuri Giants, and got a hold of Anderson Espinoza of the Oryx Buffaloes. This is a guy I've wanted to talk to since I saw him pitch in the spring. His stuff was more electric than one is used to seeing in March.
Mm.
Really good movement, really good command. And I think we've seen that. And we got into a couple of issues, basically what went right and what went wrong.
Mm.
Now you'll hear him. He is an enthusiastic, positive, joyful guy. And it's just so much fun to talk to him. And I'm sure you'll enjoy. So let's just have a listen.
Okay, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is Oryx Buffalo's new import, Anderson Espinoza. So great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, man. Yes, to the old fans, I'm Anderson Espinoza, pitcher for the Buffalo Audits, and I send you this message. Thank you for supporting me, and I'm excited to be here in Japan, man.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us. What kind of adjustments did you make to Japanese baseball this spring, and maybe how is that process going?
The process is a little bit different because the Japanese baseball, the system changed a little bit than the States.
Sure.
But, you know, baseball is about adjustment, man. You have to make adjustment no matter in what situation you are right now, or where situation you was in before.
Sure.
But I think it's the same baseball, you know. The mentality is the same. It's like a compete against the other team, compete against you too. Like trying to learn. Japanese baseball is a little bit different because maybe they don't have like a power hitter than the States, but they fast, they can bunting, they can steal bases, so you have to be ready to pitch against them. But I mean, other than that, man, I feel so happy to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I'm being having success is because you have to make adjustment quick,
right.
And that's what I'm been doing right now. Yes.
And now when you started, of course, one of the first things is trust in the catcher.
Yes.
And Ken,
yes.
And you got a bunch of catchers.
Yes.
And Ken is such a great catcher.
Yes. Yes. It's a little bit different because it's my first time in
sure.
In MPB baseball.
Right.
But so they know, the catchers know about the hitter more
sure.
than me. So
sure.
sometimes I have to follow him.
Sure.
But we negotiate like, hey, we're gonna do this. You have you want to? I'm doing this, so let's make let's make until a middle point, and let's do it. You know.
So between innings, do you often go and like, why did you want to do this? And this is why I wanted this pitch.
Yes, because I believe in a lot on myself, like on my plan to how attack the hitters, but they have like a great plans too,
sure.
because they've been here before them.
Right, right.
You know, they've been playing this level or this league many years, right?
Sure.
So my I have the same plan, like hey, let's attack the hitters like this, mm-hmm. like this, and that's why I think that I am. We are in June right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in May, I'm being tough a little bit,
right?
Because I had the same plan,
right?
From March and April,
right?
And when I faced them, like a fighters, Sussman again, I had the same plan.
Okay.
And they catch.
They were ready
me.
For
yeah,
you.
Exactly. And that's I thought that was happening, and in that moment, that's why I have to. Believe more in my catcher.
Right.
Believe more in their plan, and now I'm pitching better. That I have like a quality start.
Right,
after
right.
that,
right.
It's because we change a little bit. Like,
okay.
Hey, let's do this. Let's do this. Let's change this. And
Now, when you did get hit, and I was really surprised, but when you know this happens. Of course, people get. It's always that game.
Yes.
Did you change your other than? Just the belief in what the catchers were telling you. Did you change the way you approached your bullpens at all? Was there any physical adjustment?
No, a physical adjustment. I've been doing the same.
Okay.
Maybe when I get score, you know, I'm a little bit frustrated because
sure.
you know the pitcher doesn't want a bat.
Right.
It's even like we don't. Buffalo is losing right now. Right now, so it's hard to win the game. So,
sure.
our job right now is more because we have to keep the game like tied or you know under that one or two runs because
sure.
we want to win. You know,
sure.
I want to help the team win and the team trying to help me win. You know, and so it's like a. You know, trying to fight each other, so it's gotta be
hard.
It's hard.
Your team
it's hard,
score.
but I'm excited, man. I'm enjoying it this process. Man.
Excellent. So, what have you learned?
Many okay, things.
Couple things then.
Let's see. So it's my first time, like throwing like between innings, you can warm up here.
Yeah, two outs, come out here.
Yes, because we have just five pitches.
Sure.
The warm up, you know, like you and the hotel, you have to bring your clothes,
yeah,
your rightful clothes to here. Yes, it's a new for me, and you know, I like the Japanese culture, man. I think it's awesome,
the
and the Japanese culture.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I think it's awesome. and I'm learning a lot about that, man.
I'm glad to hear that. Of course, you know, the big thing, because baseball's hard.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're playing, you know, single A.
Yes.
If you take it easy, yes, they're going to kill you.
Yeah, of course, yes.
So I see the guys that come here have this attitude of, you know, there's going to be a lot of things I don't know, but yeah, I have to embrace it.
Yes.
I have to learn.
Yes.
So every day is learning experience.
A lot, yes. Because here, I don't know if other teams, but Buffalo audits, if you pitch today, you have to rest more like a 7 or 8 day.
Right, right.
Sometimes 10 day, you know.
Usually it's 6, but...
Exactly. And you have to, you know, you have to be fine with that.
Sure.
And you have to, you know, playing with this, you know. And
that's a big thing.
It's a big team. It's a big team when you're... For example, when I was in the state, I pitch every, I don't know, 6 day.
Sure.
Something like that. But when they... Even if when you're pitching good, like, you know, you're killing like a outing, and then they stop. Oh, man, and it's hard to come back, you know, like, oh, 10 days now, you know, and have to come back to keep on the same adrenaline, same routine. But it is what it is, man. You have to play with it. And yeah, that's why I told you that I'm enjoying this process.
Well, you know, I'm glad to hear that because, you know, the one thing about Japan is that, you know, like you said, you're working together.
Yes.
And sometimes it's a negotiation.
Yes.
But one of the biggest things in Japan is people willing to be a part of the team.
Exactly.
And, you know, and accept things they can't deal with.
Exactly.
And you see guys.
Yes.
Last year, Trevor Bauer was there.
Yes.
And he pitched very well, but I think no Japanese team wants him back because, not because of the other stuff, I was surprised, but because one day he blew up on the field at his teammates.
No. That's the other team. This I know pretty much, I don't know if you know, Robert Suarez, he's the closer with the San Diego Padres.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
He played here, and I talked to him as soon as I knew that I came here. I talked to him by WhatsApp.
Oh, you're from Venezuela too?
We're from Venezuela together, yeah. And I met him last year in the spring training. And he told me, hey man, the Japanese culture is different. The baseball system is different. You have to be comfortable with it. You know, don't look bad, you know. It's part of it's their game, it's their country, you know, and you have to, he told me that they don't gonna make you in a bad situation, but you have to be, you know, with him, trying to talk with the team, talk with the manager. I know Jack Nakajima-san.
Sure.
He was with the Padres, and I know pretty much him. And I mean, I felt happy with the Buffalo team, man. I think they received me like a well, and that's awesome, man. Because they made me feel like I'm home.
Okay, thank you once again, Anderson Espinosa. Really generous with your time. All his teammates were already back snacking in the buffet, and he was standing out on the sideline. I was the only reporter left on the sidelines, and he was the only player on the field who wasn't wearing a Giants uniform taking infield.
awesome. Well, yeah, we always appreciate the players talking to us, especially the guys who you could hear him making an effort to enunciate in English really well and clearly. Mm. So that was it's all appreciated. We love the guys.
Yeah.
They do an excellent job of fielding our questions when we go out there to the ballparks. I appreciate that. You know, just like you said in your intro, what a genuinely positive guy. I mean, he brought a smile to my face as I'm just listening to the interview, because I'm thinking, yeah, this is good. But in terms of the content, I really love how I wouldn't say pin him down, but you kept coming back to the pitcher catcher relationship. And I loved his answers, and I loved that you stayed on it. I like what he talked about, start with a plan and then adjust. And I think that as a pitcher, probably more, well, I don't know, anybody in baseball, you have to do that. You have to start with a plan, and you have to be able and willing first, and then able to make adjustments and do something different. So when he's talking about listening to the catcher because he knows the hitters better, and how obviously all these guys who play at this level have some amount of confidence and narcissism within themselves. They know they can get the job done, or they feel like they can get the job done. And they don't want to hear people telling them what to do, especially some catcher. They don't even know that well. So I think, you know, you talked about the fact that Oryx has played a lot of catchers and that he has had to learn about these guys. But to hear him say, yes, we'll go back to the dugout and then we'll discuss, you know, what's going on here, or what happened. And then we knew we had to make another plan. In fact, I think we could see that because Anderson started out the season like gangbusters, and then he kind of slowed down a little bit results wise. But you know exactly, or at least we hear exactly how he has gotten back on track. And that's by listening to these catchers, understanding what everybody is, how the adjustments are being made against him and what he can do to counteract that. And then, you know, execute the pitches. I mean, everything's just a plan, right? You need to execute. And so I liked hearing that. And let's not forget, a great plan is fine on paper, but you know, it takes both parties, not just the pitcher, but when in the moment, you know, not just early in the count or whatever is happening, it takes in the moment to have complete or to complete that mission. And it's not a one person thing. We always want to blame a lot on the pitcher when they give up something, or we want to blame the catchers when they don't throw runners out. And we have to remember that's a symbiotic relationship. It's a partnership. They're both in it just as much as the other. So anyway, I was thinking about Anderson and how he's leading the Buffaloes in wins. he has 5 wins, and that leads the club. And we just would never, I mean, obviously they lost Yoshinobu Yamamoto, whom the Dodgers might've lost today, because he left his game after a couple innings, and the old forearm tightness or whatever they talked about. So I don't, that does not bode well, but anyway.
Yeah, that's a common precursor to a Tommy John diagnosis.
Yes. Yeah. And it's only a matter of time. Imanaga's coming up too. So, but anyway, Anderson with 5 wins leading the club, and we knew they were going to struggle, but I would have imagined guys like, Shinpei de Yamashita has 0 wins. I thought he was going to win today. I think I even went away from that game and started focusing more on the Rakuten Eagles and the Bay Stars and their rookie pitcher, or their young pitcher who threw a shutout in his second start. And I got away from that game, and by the time I got back to it, the Buffaloes had blown the lead and blew Yamashita's first win. So he still has 0 wins. He's 0-2. So think about that. Your Oryx Buffaloes wins leader, Anderson Espinosa. What about you?
Well, I think the key issue there was A, he came in, you know, came to Oryx with a support network, not only manager Satoshi Nakajima, who he knew from their time with the Padres, but also the trainer, one of the trainers, the strength trainer with Oryx, is the former fighter's strength trainer who went to work for the Padres for several years.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
So he's back. So there's a thing in, you know, there's a connection there, and those guys were the reason they got him when he was available. He's still quite, I think he's 26 or 26.
Yeah. 26.
So, it's really something, and he's just so much fun. And a colleague of mine who covers the Buffaloes said, you know, he's really a 2-pitch pitcher. And I says, no, he's not. You know, he's got the 2-seamer, which is really good. And he's got a 4-seamer, which is, he locates really, really well. I mean, it's not a great fastball, but his ability to locate it on the corners is magnificent, and can be magnificent, as we saw in his last start. And he also throws a kind of a knuckle curve, and he has the other pitches, but the issue with him is, and as you said, the issue is self-confidence versus trust. And the more he had success, so basically he started the season shaking off his catchers, and that worked until it didn't, until teams saw him again. And then, as he said, Oh, at that instant, I realized I was going down the wrong road. And of course, manager Satoshi Nakajima apparently told him, cut that stuff out. So now he's, and I think the bit about when he said we sort of meet and meet in the middle, I think that was stuff in March.
Okay.
And then once he figured out how the world works, he stopped MTV listening world. To the catchers. Yeah. then he was fine. I know what I'm doing. And, you know, baseball is like life. It teaches us that it's much harder than we think it is. So he got a lesson. And then he's been pretty sharp since then. So, I mean, he has good stuff, but he basically needs, you know, he needs a hall monitor to guide him, you know, to show him which way to go with his good stuff. Because in Japan, if you're
a hall monitor,
you know,
one of those nice ones or one of those little snarky, snooty ones you want to slap?
Oh, that I don't know. That depends on the individual, I suppose. But Kenya Wakatsuki, he's got such a kind, gentle face. I can't imagine him being snarky or annoying. Okay. But no, the thing being that he has good stuff, but the problem in Japan is that there will be these guys who know, you know, and I've said it before, there'll be guys who have no business hitting anybody for a home run, but they'll be looking on one mistake in the zone on one kind of pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's on a first pitch. It's usually a get me over first pitch strike they're looking for.
Mm.
And, you know, they might not ever see it, but if they see it, there's a good chance it's going to end up in the seats as one of their two or three home runs that year.
Miki Tanaka.
And these pitchers, I know, those pitchers, they're all going like, what's up with this guy? This guy couldn't hit anybody. He couldn't hit my grandma, but he hit me for a home run. You know, so this happens. And you watch it over and over and you see these little guys, you know, muscling up to these pitches, and it does happen. And it's just annoying. It's one more thing to be annoyed about them. So, anyway, so that was that, and I really enjoyed the whole bit, and Oryx has got they've got a bunch of imports who've done quite well. One of the imports has been doing quite well is Andres Machado, and today he did not do quite well.
He's the one who got me all mixed up, because I thought Oryx had won the game. I had it on with no volume, but I just assumed that was going to be back pocket game, so I veered away, and boy, missed it.
So it does happen. And he's a very direct guy. And actually, I love his approach. He's got a very PL approach. I want to get ahead in counts, make batters hit my pitch, and get in and out of at bats as quickly as possible, which is always easier said than done in Japan when you have these. I don't remember who it was this past week who had about the most annoying at bat I've seen this year. I think it was against Keiji Takahashi. I watched most of those games Friday, that somebody 14. No, it was on Thursday. But I think it was against the Swallows, and he had 14 or 15 pitches.
Yeah.
And I'm just going like, just pull out a gun and shoot this guy. And I remember Jerry.
Just hit him with a pitch. Yeah, hit him out
exactly.
Of my face.
You know, and I don't advocate violence, but I was telling my colleague about one time Jeremy Powell got a comeback. He got a little comebacker or a bunt or something, and he took the ball and he ran over the hitter in the baseline. And I'm going, What did Yusuke Torigoi ever do to you? He's just one of these annoying hitters who fouls off pitches, and he has no intention of hitting it fair. and his blood boiled, and he knocked him senseless.
Love it. Love it. All right. Well, thank you very much for the interview. It was a good chat and really enjoyed that. Let's make a four-seam transition and congratulate the Rakuten Eagles for winning their first interleague championship and collecting that 30 million yen check that they're going to get. I was surprised. I think I said under my breath last week, I didn't think they could hold on. And if you really look at it, they didn't really hold on. the Hawks made a charge, and the Hawks had a great opportunity, but the Hawks fell short. I just know that had both teams won today and finished with the same record, it was going to come down to run differential or something like that.
Something, or coin flippage or something.
Yeah,
I didn't, maybe you have some silly thing.
Some silly thing. But I thought it was, they said on Pro Yaki News that it was going to be run differential. So I was assuming okay. that the Hawks were going to win that race. I didn't even look.
Sure. But I think probably, yeah.
Yeah, but congratulations. I'm surprised. Every year, I think we see a PL team make a surprising run in Interleague. When not maybe winning Interleague, but they win a bunch of games and they kind of right their ship. And but yeah, this is really fun for the Rakuten Eagles because it was 20 years ago that the team played in its first season in MPB. So that was nice. Do you remember the first series or the first couple of games? I remember, I think Iwakuma,
I went to the first game. Iwakuma, Hisashi Iwakuma beat the Lotte Marines, and then
Shinsuke, thank goodness,
Watanabe and the Marines. I didn't go. Was it 29-2 or something?
26-2 or something like that. Yeah,
something.
Yeah.
It was in the tens of runs.
Yeah, something ridiculous. So I'm glad you didn't go to that one. But yeah, the team has come a long way. Obviously, won a Japan Series championship in 2013 with Masahiro Tanaka leading the way. And where, you know, he's nowhere to be found this season. The team has, I kept joking, I talked about it in the prediction show for the Pacific League, that they had a bunch of older players who just weren't performing, and suddenly a few of them woke up. Daichi Suzuki woke up, Hideto Asamura woke up a little bit, I think more toward the end of Interleague. He was getting more attempts or at bats and some work, and then some guys on the pitching staff woke up. I shouldn't say woke up, they just kind of turned it up. But it was just a combination, and then guys like Yuya Ogo had a strong interleague performance. I'm not sure. I didn't see who the MVP was. I'm just assuming it's going to come from the Eagles. They're all going to vote from some Eagle, and I wouldn't be surprised.
I think it doesn't
Ogo.
Have to come anymore.
It doesn't.
Last year they changed.
But what
it,
do you think their habit is? They're little programmed, you know, machines. They don't know how to think on their own. So anyway, Michael Franco also. They dusted him off and inserted him into the lineup, and he was producing. But I think it was the bullpen, because I think the bullpen got a lot of work during Interleague. I don't think many of the guys, I mean, we had a couple of Central League guys. We had the no-hitter. We had a couple of shutouts and all that stuff, but I think it was the bullpen. And then, again, guys like Suzuki, Daichi Suzuki, just coming up big for them. In big situations, he had a two-run home run today, kind of gave them some separation early on the carp. So, yeah, I was impressed. I got to be honest. I didn't think they would hang on and do this thing.
Yeah, it was impressive. They were, I think it's good. You know, I think it is good. It's, you know, if you want to call it fate or whatnot, that if it hadn't been for the 2004 players, you know, the contraction, the owners trying to contract in PB to 10 teams, and say the fans and players, this is historic. The fans and players saved the NPB structure as it exists now. It wasn't the owners. It was the fans and the players who saved it. And as a result of that, they got Interleague and they got the Rakuten Eagles. So 20th year of Interleague is won by the Rakuten Eagles. I guess it's fitting. I don't know if it's fateful, but it's fitting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I enjoyed seeing him do well. I was rooting for him, of course. And even though I had, like I said the Hawks were, I didn't say the Hawks per se, but some other teams were going to actually make a run as well. But here's the thing. I believe they started they started Interleague trying to, scrap and get the 500, and they ended up going 13-5 against the Central League. And so now they didn't actually make up that much ground in the standings. They're still in fourth place, but they're at 500 at 31-31. And so they did it. They completed that, those two missions. They got to 500 and they won the Interleague session. So very, very impressive. But I'm not sure we get this Ogo that we get this Suzuki, if Asamura can stay healthy. I really, you know, I like Michael Franco, and I, you know, he came up swinging like he had, he was a swinger with an attitude. I know you don't get that reference, but
no,
was a swinger with an attitude, and he was bringing it. And he, you know, when he makes contact, he has potential to get hits because he's going to hit line drives a lot of times. So really impressive. I don't know what else to say. I was shocked, though. I did not see this coming. One quick thing, that I do think the MVP of Interleague, if it's not my man Chusei Manami, because his batting average was well over 300, but his defense went down during it. He's like, we can't have both things. We can't have nice things. but Shun Mizutani of the Fighters, I think, is the Interleague MVP, and he was batting 500 almost there for a while. He kind of slowed down here at the very, I wouldn't even say that, maybe the last game and a half here, because I don't think he did that well today, or he didn't come through with a big hit, because it seems like every time he was up there in a big situation, he was coming up with a big hit. But yeah, I think he would get my vote for Interleague MVP.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, I thought, Alsko, another name you didn't mention was Yosuke Tatsumi. Had a great interleague. He didn't hit for average, but he did everything else.
Yeah. I like him. Yeah. Guy who plays with a lot of confidence, too.
So, okay. Well, congratulations to the Eagles.
Yep. Now, we're not going rocking with Roki again. And okay. I expected him to throw this weekend, and I was waiting to see him. And then I realized, or Jim told me, he had been deactivated. And did it come with a injury report?
It was upper limb issues that since his last start, his only interleague start, I think he pitched against Hiroshima Carp.
Mm.
And that was it. So the only game the Marines won in that three-game series in Hiroshima. Speaking
right.
of, yeah, they had trouble. The two, you know, when we did our power rankings last month, I didn't have the Marines at the top of the table, but
maybe you had too much April in there. That's why.
Yeah, well, I apologize for April. She can be naughty. But another team I had at the bottom.
My favorite.
Let's not get John. Sorry, I got John started on y'all. But I had the Eagles down at the bottom, and they had a good win loss record.
Yeah,
I mean that was what happened. They had a good record in tight games, and which comes with a share of luck. So, but still. You know, they got what they got. Congratulations. And there's no telling. It's really no telling, except my best power team and my worst power team have performed expectations, or lowered expectations, if you want to talk about the Cebu Lions.
Oh, well, let's make a two-seam transition here and talk about the standings. So the you want to go with the Pacific League first? That's fine. The Hawks are looking strong despite the loss of Yuki Yanagita, who's out injured, probably won't be back. The likelihood is he won't be back this season, but I don't know what's worse, the Cebu Lions or the Chunichi Dragons. Both teams are pretty much unwatchable, but at least the Lions, to me, it seems like they have more potential, even though they're playing a bunch of guys who sometimes I'm like, oh, I remember this guy. He came up a couple games last year or 2 years ago or something like that. But then they've changed so many and they've shuffled so much looking for some kind of combination. I don't think that's good for the players. I don't think it's good for the organization. Find some guys and at least give them a couple weeks, 3 weeks, or even a month and let them play. You're not going to see that much over a couple days, even if you have favorable matchups. Some guys still fail. So they're just shuffling and scuffling, and it just looks bad. It's to the point now, I almost wanted to look up what the worst record has been in the Pacific League in the past, I don't know, 50 years. I don't think they're on that kind of a pace, but the way they lose games, they're going to be on that pace soon. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, they are a little scary, and I think they have a right to be, you know, I haven't talked to Kono Takahashi. I was thinking about it, but after he lost yesterday, I said, do I really want to bug him when he's 0-7?
I was at the Dome the other day, and I saw, everybody, you know, when a team is doing poorly and the whole, there's like a dark cloud cast over the team. It wasn't like that.
No, it isn't.
It did seem a little less energetic. But it wasn't a dark cloud that was cast over the team. But I can't see how they come out of this series and out of Interleague not feeling like this could be the end of our lives or something, because it's that bad. And they were 4-14 in Interleague play. I mean, no, this is not how life is supposed to go.
So. You know, and as I said before the start of Interleague, the Lions were the one Pacific League team that did better. Actually, they are the one, I'm sure they're still the one Pacific League team that has played better against the Pacific League than the Central League. Their record against Pacific League teams since the start of Interleague is better than their record against Central League teams. So they've historically not been a good Interleague team.
Well, that showed up there. Well, they're 19-44 as we speak here with no ties, which kind of shed some light on their bullpen, because it seems like when they get into these late inning games, either if they can score early in that 10th inning, extra inning games, if they can score early in that 10th inning, they might win them, but they don't seem to be winning later and later as the game goes on. They have more of a chance to give up runs than score them, but I don't know. Do you see a 40-something win total for this season, or can they get over that?
Yeah, I think that's it. Well, you know, it all depends on whether the team is, you know, you've seen, I used to notice this with teams that were playing badly and basically gave up in the second half.
Yes.
That used to be sort of a trademark of the Bay Stars when they played bad, and the Taiyo Whales when they played bad.
And in those days, there was no playoff system. So it just seemed like, okay, we're out there, we're trying to get off the field as best we can, but I'm not running into any fences and going to blow up my shoulder
to make that play. When there's a context where the rewards are not there, such as we used to have with Oryx, when everybody on the team from the bat boy to the manager knew that the front office had zero interest in whether they won or lost and was only in it for themselves.
Yeah.
It was very hard for players to take, you know, to take that extra effort. And once they cleared that nest of, you know, that's roughy scoundrels and rapscallions out of the front office, things got a lot better very quickly. I think it's a matter of what the team is trying to accomplish and whether it, you know, a couple of players turn it around, which is possible, and they just become, I think you first of all, you always expect, you generally, when a player is doing poorly in the first half, you don't necessarily expect him to do poorly in the next half. You expect him to be normal. You know, you... The expectation is that the results are going to follow how they have normally fallen.
Yes.
So you don't think, you know, there may be a reason for it. Okay, if there's an injury or something, then that age is also another issue. You don't always expect the same. But, you know, if a guy is a... We'll use batting average, for example. If a guy's norm is to hit between 270 and 320 and he's hitting 190, you would pretty much expect him to hit 270 to 320 in the second half, somewhere in that range, or a much wider range because it's a half a season. And they are, they're not quite at halfway yet, but they're almost there. And so... It could be the Lions have, you know, they've lost their best player right now. He's on the farm as a precaution, who is a shoot to Tonosaki, or at least he was until yesterday. So I don't know what's going on with them. I'm glad Well, I'm sure Hisanobu Watanabe's wife is probably not glad that he's managing. It's like, why does he have to get dragged through this again? But he's a positive guy, and I think, of course, Kazuo Matsui is also a positive guy. It didn't get him anywhere.
Yeah, now he might. I don't know what they saw, what they were looking at, and like I said, the compete level, if that wasn't high enough for them, I mean, the results are going to be what they are, but there was something that they saw that made them make this change. But I
don't
they're
see
worse.
It.
They're worse.
No, I don't see it. I think the Lions are the team that the front office made.
Yeah, we can't.
And now
see
they're
it.
Going. Now they're blaming the manager.
Yeah, I just didn't think they had enough talent. That's why I didn't predict that they would finish very high. Mm. And then they're just proving that to the upper management here. They're showing what's going on. I had a
well. I thought
fifth,
it was,
but
as I said last week, I thought it was interesting that somebody said that the Lions have a program of bringing back their former stars, and that's why Matsu is back, and that's why he was groomed to be manager. And the reason for that was to make up for the free agent losses that they've had, because the front office is too had no interest, because ownership had no interest in keeping these guys.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is, you know, this is the team that ownership made, and that's their maybe they're thinking long term. Maybe their focus is on the future, but somewhere there's a disconnect between what they expected. Obviously, this is a team they probably should have expected, although not quite. You know, they maybe a 400 team was expected, and a 300 team has
emerged.
Not.
Yeah, it's an imposter.
This is probably also a team that could, you know, they could play 500 the rest of the way. And
I would agree.
I don't see it, but it's possible.
I would agree with you if SoftBank weren't doing so well, if the Fighters hadn't made such a jump and they're playing much better, and Lotte and Rakuten weren't playing that well. And then you got the three-time defending Pacific
I don't
League
see. I'll
championships
tell you,
right
see.
Above you. So I don't think they can.
I don't see. I'll tell you, to be honest, I don't see Lotte and Rakuten as really. I don't see either of them as playoff teams. I think the playoff teams are going to be the Buffalo's, Fighters, and Hawks.
I agree with you, but I'm just looking at what we've seen up to now. And so, and let's
nobody's keen to sink to the Lions level. That's probably going to be hard.
Let's talk about the SoftBank Hawks now. 8.5 games above or over the Fighters right now, and Fighters are in second place, and they're basically in a tie with Lotte, which had some streaks there and had played well. But I like what I'm seeing. Yes.
Speaking of which, something has now happened that hadn't happened, which was the Cebu Lions have now become the first team to score fewer runs than the SoftBank Hawks have allowed this year. Until now, the Hawks have allowed fewer runs than any team in Japan and scored more runs than any team had allowed. But now the Lions have gone below the SoftBank opponent's level of offense.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the Hawks, and let's stop beating up on the dead here.
Lions.
Yeah. I like what the Fighters are doing. I tend to believe in what I'm seeing. I don't know that it's sustainable to see all these young players contribute consistently throughout the season. The Yua Tamiyas, I'm saying young players, but the guys like Yuya Gunji, he's not young, but he is unproven on this level for an entire season.
He was unproven enough for the Dragons to sell him for a bag of balls.
Well, the Dragon. Well, they played the interleague series with the Dragons, and all the former Dragons kind of stepped up and all tied him to a post and just all took their shots. You know, kicking, punching, took a stick to him. You know, Takumi Yamamoto, the tiny tosser, he even got a win against him in relief. It was ridiculous. Every former Dragon or anybody who lived in Nagoya came up and took a whack at him and walked away. It was ridiculous.
It was probably that thing. They felt like the Dragons betrayed their fans, and they wanted to stick it to them.
Well, they did. So, but the thing that impresses me about the Fighters is they're getting quality starts from guys who they're sometimes taking them out, they're giving them spot starts, they're just shuffling guys in there once in a while to get a start, and they're getting quality performances from these guys. So I think they can stay in this hunt. I'm just not sure about third place here. And you said you think the playoff team is the Buffaloes to go with the Hawks and the Fighters. I agree. I wouldn't be surprised if the Marines figure out a way to get Sasaki healthy, get behind him, and he leads them into the playoffs. But I don't know. Where are you in terms of the Fighters actually closing this gap of 8.5 games?
I don't see it.
Yeah.
I don't see it. I think it's just too SoftBank's like they're going. You know what happens? You know, if the Swallows lose Munetaka Murakami, you know what you'll hear this gasp in the clubhouse.
Mm.
You know what you hear when Yuki Yanagita goes down? Cheers. I got a chance to play. They've got guys, they're going like, oh geez, this gives us a chance to use some guys who are eating up Western League pitchers for lunch.
Yes. Yeah. Did you hear what Nao Higashihama said about Yoshiyasu Sasagawa? He said, yeah, I thought I was watching Yuki Yanagita the way he swung at that ball. Because he hit a home run. And I'm like, yeah, I thought so too. The finish of his swing when he cracked and launched this ball. And they're just getting guys who come up, and you're right, they just replace talent with some different talent. And I agree that I don't see it, but I think we're gonna have to see when those teams go head to head how the Fighters can compete, and then what the other teams do the Eagles throw their best pitchers when they see them, do the Marines throw their best pitchers when they see them, and I'm talking about those teams matching up against the Hawks. And that might help shorten that gap or lessen that gap, but should be a fun watch. Let's move to the Central League. This thing is a mess. And I think during interleague play, I think we had three teams. I think at one point the Carp were in first, the Giants were in first, and maybe I'm hallucinating.
I think the Tigers started in first.
The Tigers.
The Giants slipped in there for a couple of days.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, what is this? You know, so because I remember the announcer saying it's the two leaders of their respective leagues challenging each other tonight. And I'm like, well, didn't I see that last week when they were playing the Tigers? You know?
Yeah, that happened with a few of the Hawks series.
But I really, the Giants recently obviously played well up in Hokkaido this weekend. What was it? They won two games. They had a really fun game today that ended up in a 3-3 tie after 12 innings. The Carp also have been looking good at times. And third place. It's a mess. The Central League is an utter mess. I do think we're looking at the top three and that those teams are going to finish in the playoffs. The order is the only thing we're going to have to worry about.
Yeah, DeNA is boosted a little bit. They were put in a position to kick the Lions when they were down, and boy, did they kick them good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just beating up on little kids.
So I think the three teams who are in the lead now are very likely going to be the three. I wouldn't, the Swallows, I'm not going to count them out. I'm going to count out the Bay Stars and the Dragons, but I think the Swallows have a chance to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I like the Swallows. I just not seeing the consistency on the mound. But,
well,
yeah.
You know what I'm not seeing is the consistency of the players they're sending to the mound. Now, they had a big, because me, I kind of keep an eye on the Swallows. So last week we had Kazuto Taguchi come back saving games. And then this past week we had Noboru Shimizu, who is really the key guy for that bullpen since 2020, the setup man.
Yes.
He came back and he's going like, I figured things out. And he pitched one game in the seventh inning. They had him pitch a seventh inning game and he came back and he threw a 1-2-3 inning. I'm going, yeah. And then on Saturday, I'm watching the game and I'm going, Jesus, Swallow's got a one-run lead. And you know, and so it's going to be, we're going to see something. And then they threw Taichi Ishiyama, who's been an eighth inning guy, their former closer, and he's been the closer a lot this year. And he blew up like he has, like he does frequently.
Traditionally,
when he gets,
yeah. It's a
when
tradition.
He gets to, he's one of these guys who, when he gets too much work, he flattens out a bit. He needs constant. He's one of these guys who needs a lot of care. Mm. He needs consistent work. You know, not 3 days in a row, 2 days in a row sometimes, but generally, you know, pitch him every other day and he's marvelous. So he needs a lot of care. You know those guys. There's a bunch of them out there. So he was a guy who got thrust into situations. We don't want to throw you, but we need you. And oh, I guess we didn't need him. So anyway, that has now descended to giving the ball to other people. So I expected to see Shimizu and Taguchi in the eighth and ninth innings, and now they're missing. So that's, to me, the issue. If those guys come back, I see the Swallows as a very, very strong team. But if they don't come back, I don't see them finishing. I see them finishing in fifth place.
Yeah, I like the Bay Stars better than the Swallows. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're the team from that group of three in the bottom half that ends up making a good, strong run at some point. And we've seen Tyler Austin play really well recently after we thought he might have been dead after that catch he tried to make in the camera well a couple of weeks ago. But
that'll be the headline: Tyler Austin powers Bay Stars.
There you go. But the Dragons, they're just ridiculous. Umberto Mejia had just indicative of how bad this team is. He had a comebacker with a runner at third the other day. I think it was first and third. Who cares what the situation was?
And he had the runner off third.
He had to do was run at the runner to keep him from going home. And instead, he twists his feet up. His feet were pointed in the wrong direction, and he flips the ball to third wildly and ends up letting the runner score.
I think you're right. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just want to say how right you were the other day when we were talking about this. I think Japanese teams tell them when you're in it, when you're running somebody down, don't run.
Yeah.
Just throw the ball.
Just throw it. Yeah. That's the first thing. Just throw it to a base. Pick a base, throw. And it was ridiculous. I'm looking at this. I had the game on for some reason. I think self-torture. And I, at that point, I'm like, I'm out. I cannot watch this happen this way. And I know I need to, because I need to watch the Marines, but I can't watch this. This is not professional level. So anyway, let's move along. We have an assignment. We are going to have a one seam transition. And we had an assignment that we gave to Jim.
What's this wee stuff? You and the kids? Okay, I'll get you, Kanan, KJ.
And I was on the way to work the other day, and I was thinking, you know, we've got a lot of data, and I hear about this TrackMan data, and we've heard about how hard the balls are hit, and every AP story you do now, the home run, in the AP story, it tells you how hard the home run was hit or things like that. And I'm like, well, you know, we've got that data. Let's see what team in MPV is hitting the ball the hardest.
Unfortunately, we don't have that data.
Oh, I thought we did.
It's not public. No. It is not public. Japanese, the StatCast stuff that Baseball Savant publishes in America is published. In Japan, they have the TrackMan data, but it's not published. No, we only have, the data website DeltaGraphs has a scout at every game, and they assign values to every hard hit, every ball. And I don't think it's using the radar gun. I think they might be using a radar gun.
Right. So we essentially,
they're eyeballing. Eyeballing the
line out A or liner B or liner C for how fast they think it is. And okay. I got you. Okay. So it's not StatMan.
So we have a hard hit percentage.
Okay.
And soft contact, hard contact percentage, soft and middle. Middle is usually the one that helps the teams the most. Middle is the one that is most likely to be fielded, because especially if it's on the ground, if it's soft, it's tough for an infield. You know, we're talking about flares and rollers.
Okay. Well, as I always like to claim, nobody watches more MPV games than I do. So I am going to try to guess the top two to three teams that have on this. Through this this eyeball system or this
sure
again
so it's your one eyeball versus their 40 different eyes.
My TV, yeah, my mostly TV eyeballing versus they're at the stadium eyeballing.
Yeah, and
but they, it's one person.
Each one.
Yeah, it's watching one person one watching game. Each game versus me trying to watch six at one time and not watching all six every day.
Do we get odds?
Yeah, nope. All right, so for me, I've been watching this season, and I think not based on home runs or anything, because I think if you go and count the home runs, you can maybe get a better idea, which I did not do.
Okay.
But I'm going to go with the Swallows as the team that hits the ball the hardest because of Domingo Santana, Jose Osuna, Munetaka Murakami, Tetsuto Yamada, and guys like that, among some of the other guys who aren't as big but still hit line drives. So I had them first, and then my next team was the Bay Stars, and Fighters was third, but I could flip-flop those because I think they're pretty close. How close am I?
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Number one is the Hawks.
I had them, but I didn't think it was the Hawks.
And then the other three teams you just mentioned are right behind them.
Mm.
So that's pretty good.
In what order?
Hawks, Fighters, Swallows. But you have to also understand that the Hawks, Fighters, Swallows, Bay Stars. But you have to understand that there's I think I only counted non-pitchers. So this is only their non-pitchers. So.
Oh, okay.
There's no benefit for being a Central League, penalty for being a Central League team here.
Yeah, right. Don't put the pitchers in. Although in the Dragons case, I'd rather see the pitchers try to hit this because I wouldn't have any expectations.
Nice.
Anytime they get a hit, it would be like Christmas. Nice. All right. Well, you say it's pretty good. I think it's a total failure. I had the Hawks on there and I was wondering where to put them.
Well,
I thought about Yamakawa and how he has been hitting well in Yanagita, but the other guys
didn't.
There's
not a lot of gap. There's not a lot of difference with these teams. 37%, 35%.
Okay,
like
give me the team. Hawks,
37.5% of their balls are considered hard contact.
Okay.
The Fighters are 35.6. The Bay Stars, the Swallows, 34.9. The
Pretty close.
Stars, 34.7. Really not much, especially those last two. The Hawks are definitely sort of in their own league.
Well, yeah, and Kensuke Kondo, I forgot about him, but he's got like 9 home runs, right? He didn't hit one today, so that's a lot of home runs. So he's hitting the ball pretty hard. Okay, then at the bottom, I had just because of the records, basically, but the Lions, the Dragons, and the Eagles. I didn't think the Eagles had hit a lot of home runs or anything like that, so I had them down there. How close am I?
Lions. You nailed the Lions.
Okay.
But so has everybody else.
Whoa!
You don't win a prize for that.
Hashtag high heat.
Okay. Number 12, Cebu Lions, 30.5%. So, I mean, even, you know, they're still hitting 30% of their balls hard.
Sure.
And which is, you know, essentially three quarters of how often the Hawks hit the ball hard.
Mm.
Hanshin Tigers.
Ah.
30.8%.
And
and of course they've spent their entire season going, who should be on the farm? Johan Meneses or Yusuke Oyama or Teraki Sato? Which of our guys can really hit the ball shouldn't be up here. You know, it's been a tough one. And then the Hiroshima Carp. This does not surprise me. The Hiroshima Carp are the singles hitters. And the next singles hitters team is the Lotte Marines.
Oh, okay. So I was off. All right. Well, good. Okay. Good. So that's even more frustrating for Dragons fans. They're not even the worst or the lowest in hard hit rate. And yet they can't hit the ball hard. It seems they don't hit for power very often. And basically, you need 3 hits. They need 3 hits to get a run. And that's all they usually get with the 3 hits is a run. And they start these 2-out rallies. Don't get me started. Let's move on.
They start these 2-out rallies with 1-out sacrifice bunts.
No, they don't even get that far. There's 2 outs, nobody on, and then somebody hits a double, and then another guy walks, and you know, you're like, oh, they have a chance. And no, they have no chance because they're 2 outs. And even if they get the hit, it's just a little single, and maybe the runner can score from second. Maybe he can't. I don't get me started, please, please. I'm having a nice evening.
Okay.
Okay. Let's go to fielding questions. All right. So Dave heard our conversation recently, and it was about the KBO and the players versus the MPB players. And so he wrote the following. I want to take you and Jim to task a little bit about your response to Neil's question about Korean players leaving the KBO for MPB. My impression was that your answer was basically they're not really good enough to play in MPB. And my apologies if I'm oversimplifying or mischaracterizing your answer. This ignores the historic content from the past 25 years or so. Between 1996 and 2015, there were at least 13 Korean players who left KBO to play in MPB with various degrees of success. And this is not including foreign players like Tyrone Woods. Several of these players then moved on to play in MLB. After 2015, no KBO players have joined MPB, but 8 have joined MLB, again, with varying levels of success. Prior to 2016, only 2 players had ever gone directly from KBO to MLB without playing in MPB first. So I think the more interesting question out of all this is, what changed? Why was MPB a destination for Korean stars for 20 years, but not anymore? Why are the Korean players going to MLB? And did MLB realize that they were good enough to take a chance on? Is this MLB payday that much larger than what they'd get in Japan? Thanks, Dave in Baltimore. Jim.
Okay, I think it's a really an interesting question because it covers lots of dynamics. But I think the real thing that's making the difference is players' expectations. It used to be Korean players, you know, if you were a Korean amateur, your goal was to play in Korea.
Mm-hmm. You know, or play for the national team.
Yeah. I mean, it was to play for your, you know, play in KBO and be a KBO star. I mean, we know that. And we know that in Japan, pardon the minor digression, but even after Hideo Nomo broke through and his games were eventually on TV, people were not tuned to every game. They were not really watching MLB that much. That changed with Ichiro Suzuki. And I think what happened was until Ichiro Suzuki and Hideki Matsui, daily MLB did not become a thing in Japan. And until it became a thing, kids did not grow up and high school kids did not watch MLB. They were focused on NPB. Now I think that has changed. I think now they realize, okay, NPB is a big step, but MLB is not too big a step. It's not inconceivable that a good high school player could not someday play in MLB. And I think what happened is we saw the same thing in Korea. And not necessarily because of Japan, but I think the visibility of MLB has caused a gap where Korean kids grow up. And if they really go at it and they go beyond what the coaches tell them they need to be doing and they learn for themselves, they see MLB as a target.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see MLB as the target, you know, why go to Japan? I think there's a little bit of that. So the best players are going to MLB and the next guys are staying home. I think that Japan has sort of fallen into that shadow. Whereas it used to be sort of like, I'm good enough to play. Lee Sung-yup wanted to play in MLB, but he wasn't quite, you know, the offers he was getting. And this is the other thing. The offers were not quite that good. Until after he succeeded in Japan, and then he was already at the back end of his career. So he probably could have played in MLB, but he chose Japan because it was a better deal. I think those things, the MLB scouting is also better now in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the visibility of MLB, whereas I think the Japanese scouting in Korea is not as good. I think it's a two-way street. I think they're thinking it's, you know, they're not going to get the best players, whereas they used to get most of the best Korean players wanted to play in Japan. And I think very few do now.
All right. For me, I don't think you took us to task there, Dave. I think you made some fine points.
Yeah, Dave.
That wasn't very aggressive or anything like that.
That's Dave. He's not aggressive.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. But, you know, I'm in line with your thinking there that the wide step in a middle-sized pond when you can go to the biggest pond, so go to the major leagues. That's a better jump. So that makes total sense. We've had a couple questions about KBO players recently, and I think I probably sounded like I was looking down on the KBO, and it wasn't much so much the talent level as it is the number of teams. You know, there are fewer teams, so it's very hard to get a good gauge on the competition. And again, I had only my first and only exposure to watching games on a regular basis was when ESPN was showing those games during the COVID pandemic. So, you know, and I quickly lost a lot of interest because of the lack of pitching talent. Now, I don't know. Yeah, I did talk to Bo Takahashi the other day at Seibu Dome, and he played in the KBO before he came here to Japan. And it wasn't like I was digging and trying to get him to say anything. I just asked basic questions. And yeah, he was, our relationship is total reporter talking to players. So even if I put the tape recorder away, he's not going to besmirch the KBO in any way. And he didn't. And I wouldn't expect him to. I was just looking for an answer. And he just said that they play differently in the KBO. They play more major league style baseball in terms of they don't like bunting as much as they do in Japan. Their guys try to swing for the fences and launch the ball. And sometimes they make contact. And that's maybe why the pitchers don't look as good. But in general, the talent level isn't that different. So if that's how I came across, it was just because the number of teams is, there's so fewer teams in KBO. I was looking at the pool and saying, well, the pool is smaller, so we're not going to get as many high elite talent players from that pool. It's too small. But I was, again, working under the assumption that there is a little bit of a drop-off from MPB. And I think that's safe to say in terms of the pitching, because that's what I could see. I don't know. Maybe there might be a lot more power hitters, but you know, we've had these, you talked about Lee Seon Yeop and we've had Lee Dae-ho and other Son Donyo back in the day who came and pitched for the Dragons. And these guys, nobody has come over from the KBO and turned MPB upside down. You know, nobody has done that. And even the players who went to the major leagues, KBO players who have gone to the major leagues, they haven't been elite all-star level players. Not all of them. Maybe a couple guys have been close. So I'm just thinking that I do like what Jim is talking about, the fact that these guys are seeing major league games now. There are more Korean players over there. So that becomes the goal. You know, maybe they were showing some MPB games over there 20 years ago, but that's not the case there now, or maybe the popularity has dropped off. But I would just say the number of KBO players going to the major leagues is a good thing, and that's going to help all of Asian baseball, not just KBO in itself. But here's another thing, though. I wouldn't just count the number of guys who go from KBO to MLB and say, okay, well, this X number of guys have gone, because there are guys in MPB who could have gone who didn't. Guys like Yuki Yanagita, Tomoyuki Sugano, guys like that who just didn't go. I think Tetsuto Yamada is another guy who probably had a chance to go and just didn't go. And so there have to be examples of those guys in the KBO, guys who could have come here or gone to MLB and just didn't. They just said, you know what, I'm at a place in my career where I'm happy being in Korea and I don't want the change. I don't want to have to deal with all the other stuff. Maybe if it was 2 or 3 years ago when I was 25, I would have gone, but I'm closer to 28 and got a family now. Don't want to go over there. So there's different reasons. So I really wouldn't count. That's kind of like the results-based thing that I kind of stay away from. But, you know, I don't, who's the biggest impact players we've seen from KBO go to the major leagues? I guess Chan-ho Park. And
well, he was the first.
But he was really good, and he made a huge.
Yeah, Ha Sun Kim is probably the next. Shin-Soo Chu and probably Ha Sun Kim are the two.
And Hun Jun Ryu, yeah, those guys.
Yeah, short.
But none of those guys has been like an Ichiro Suzuki, or a Hideo Nomo, or a Hideki Matsui, or a Shohei Ohtani. We just haven't had that level of player from the KBO, so I would still wait to see until we get a player that quality or that high or that production level, let's say, and then compare. But I just wouldn't compare. I just think it's just a smaller pool. And sometimes we get these athletes and they just haven't gone over when they maybe had a chance. So I don't know. Suffice to say, it's all murky, Dave. But I did not mean to besmirch the KBO per se and say that that league is inferior. I just meant to talk about the fact that the pool is smaller and that we haven't seen the production from those players that we've seen from some of the Japanese players.
Well, when I was in Korea, I did have Korean fans besmirching the KBO plenty for us. basically saying the players I think that they were really on the coaching. They were really on the fact that the coaching in Korea tends to be really, really old school. And that it's harder for the players to break out and do their own thing. That used to be the way it was in Japan. You know, the coaches said, don't lift weights. You better not be lifting weights. Now players have more confidence to do, you know, there's more information in the cultural. Oddly enough, Japan has become a little less straitjacketed. And Korea is probably a little more still. Not the players' faults, but you know, you've got to live within the context in which you are. So,
All right. We appreciate the question, Dave. And you take us to task anytime, man. That was not taking us to task.
But thanks for the help, Dave.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And good topic to talk about. Anyone else who has a question, hit us up at JBW Podcast on X or Twitter.com. With the hashtag High Heat, send questions by email, including your voice messages to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com or hit us up on the Facebook page and leave us a comment there. My buddy Jim, always appreciate it. Love talking to you. Love talking baseball.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks a lot. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballparks.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. Submit your questions with hashtag High Heat and listen for an answer in an upcoming episode.